Welcome to the EU Startups Podcast. Sit back and enjoy the show hosted by Marcin Lewandowski.
Hey everyone, this is Marcin Lewandowski and you're listening to the EU Startups Podcast. Today's guest is a first believer, Rebecca Lotman-Redua. Rebecca runs Norsk & Evolve, a 57 million euro pre-seed fund for the builders fixing the unglamorous things that keep everything else working, like energy, supply chains, food, secure systems. And Evolve gives 250K now, follow on later, a sprint that hurts in the right way, I suppose, and advisory network that actually picks up the phone. Rebecca, such a pleasure to have you on the show. Welcome.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Amazing. Rebecca, I know that you call yourself a nerd. I think I read it somewhere that you call yourself a nerd at heart. What's a recent problem you couldn't stop deconstructing?
Well, one thing I've been nerding in on a lot lately, which I guess is a problem for everyone because it's driving a lot of the growth at our stock markets at the moment, is the problem about AI bubble at the moment and the fact that we are investing so heavily into the infrastructure and the hardware layer of this AI economy, but we're not yet really seeing the return of investments and the revenue coming in. So I've been trying to sort of debunk, is it a bubble? Is it not a bubble? What are arguments for and against? And so I've been spending a lot of time reading blogs and trying to understand this a bit better. Nice. That's been occupying a lot of my time.
Is it a bubble or not?
So I think it is a bubble, but I think it will still generate a lot of long-term value. I think it's very similar to what we saw, say, during the dot-com bubble, when we built out a lot of the internet infrastructure that later led to some of our most generational tech companies to be built on top of that. Mm-hmm. Or similar to the railway industry in the US, right? They built out too much railway, way too fast. But then eventually, of course, that laid the whole fundament for transportation in the US. So I think it's quite similar is where I've landed, that this infrastructure will generate some very valuable companies, especially companies that are tackling the really, really important and hard problems and the problems that can generate actually positive impact back to us as humans and back to society and to tackle climate change, for example, not just the incremental apps and sales bots. You know, when we get to the really good stuff, I think that's when we'll see the generational companies being built on all this investment. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's a massive discrepancy. What, $1.5 trillion being invested into fixed assets just this year, and how much revenue is actually being generated from AI at the moment? You know, maybe 50 billion euros if we're lucky this year. So we need to have that gap close. Otherwise, I think this bubble will burst.
Rebecca, let's talk about Norsk & Evolve. Can you pitch Evolve to a founder with, you know, a code, a co-founder, and a calendar full of maybes?
Okay, a calendar full of maybes. That's a good expression. All right, so Evolve is built by me and two other partners. All of us have seen sort of firsthand how the VC model very often fails. I have been 10 years in VC and seen the traditional sort of VC setup where the partners take a board seat because they think they really need a board seat, even at the early stages, and then try to add value, but how often that does not scale. You so quickly reach a roof where you can't handle enough board seats, so you stop adding good enough value. And so it's almost like a consulting model in a sense, rather than you having a product that adds value. My two other partners have been founders and operators. So they worked with some of the best VCs of the world and been very, very underwhelmed by the support they're getting. I think especially at the really early stages, when you have very you know, operational problems. You have very concrete problems where you need someone that actually understands that problem and actually can help you, and not just a sort of generalist, you know, strategy person on your board that gives some sort of high level advice based on, you know, one company journey or one sort of management book they've read. And I, you need people in your corner. And that's what we're building at Norton Evolve. We're building a product for value add for you as a founder. We do this with our in-person sprint, which brings founders together. And by bringing founders together, you also become part of a community, right? Because being a founder at really early stages, it's very lonely. There's a lot of things you need to figure out. So you actually get a lot of value just by being together. And I think the physical experience, like in the world we live in now, it's so much in the digital universe. I think we value more and more the physical interaction, actually spending time with people. And since we invest before the sprint, when you come to spend time with us, we're 100% on your side. You don't need to sell to us anymore. We're in the same boat, and we're going to help tackle your most important challenges. We do that also with an outstanding advisory network. So we have about 100 advisors that really engage with these companies, and it's unicorn founders, it's excellent operators, it's head of electrification at some of our biggest industrial companies. It's like an excellent group of people that we match make based on your particular challenges and your particular needs. And then just one final point is that we measure everything. So feedback and sort of data is what we live for. So we're constantly sort of iterating and improving. And if an advisor does not deliver, guess what? They're not invited back. So you need to like and be able to take feedback and take this data, and for us as well, to improve. And now 2 years in a row, founders have actually given us 100 in net promoter scores. And a majority of our founders go on to raise a follow-on round. So I think those two aspects are important to take into account when choosing to work with us.
Awesome. Mm. Yeah, I love it. It sounds like a partner that you would really like to have in your corner. Rebecca, you write checks at Preseed. Speaking of founders, you know, like what's a non-obvious tell that a team will, you know, get punched and still ship, still deliver?
This is one of the hardest questions, right?
Yeah.
Because we get it wrong all the time, right?
Exactly. There's going to be a lot of punches on the way, and you just got to keep going. There's a lot of grit involved. Perseverance. You've got to have this personal connection probably to the problem that you're solving. In best case, so you don't easily give up. What is it for you?
I think we do try to ask founders how they dealt with failure in the past and what did they learn from it? How did they react? How did they grow from that failure? And then you want to hear how they talk about this failure as something they've actually, you know, valued immensely and that they admit that they've failed in the past as well. So I think that's one good tell. And I do like when founders have experienced something in life. It doesn't have to be in a company journey. It can also be on the private side, right? That you have taken immense risk and that you have potentially failed, even outside sort of the business life. So we try to ask these questions, but this is super hard to know for sure.
Yeah, you know, like I was thinking about it a lot because over the last like 2 years, I had some of the best founders and investors in Europe, in the world, on the show. And so I've been learning those insights a lot. And I've been like kind of formulating my own tell or my own thesis. And one of the things that I would measure is, if you had advantage in life and you made something out of it and succeeded and you're like moved ahead, you travel the distance to let's say this point, it's nice, it's good, right? You did something about it. It's okay. But if you come from a position of disadvantage and like you're your travel, your way to like this point of like kind of success, or like whatever you did from this point of disadvantage to the point you are now, is, and I measure that what it took to actually for this person and that person to get to where they are now. And I measure that with distance traveled. So oftentimes, even if this person from a disadvantaged position is and a bit like behind the person that had an advantage, but the distance traveled was way bigger and required way more skills, way more amount of greed and so forth, I would go with that person. That's why I call it like a distance traveled.
I like that. And it makes me think about how we often discuss founders who have been part of a tech journey before. What's actually good and what's actually maybe not good, even though a lot of investors think so. Because I think sometimes investors overestimate how valuable it is that you've been part of Klarna or Spotify or one of these like high tech companies. But if you joined, like not at the very, very early stage, if you joined when everything was going really well in one of these journeys and you fell into a machinery that was already working, they had already found product market fit and you're just, you know, going along. Sure, you've been part of a cool tech company, but I would much rather have someone who joined an early stage tech startup where there were a lot of hardship and a lot of failures or close to going bankrupt, turning that around, like really having dealt with like a rocky sort of roller coaster journey at the really early stages, even if it's not as hyped as sort of brand name in tech, like much rather that person.
100%. So nicely. So this is, exactly. You can apply the distance traveled in this way as well. I like it.
For sure.
Rebecca, so what's next for us? I wanted to talk to you about the sprint itself, you know, because you guys are organized, like you said that you meet before the sprint, right? And then you you spend this time in person, you're 100% on those founders' corner already before you start. I was wondering, like, what's the like kind of one exercise during the sprint that makes founders maybe a bit annoyed on at first, let's say on Tuesday, but you know, grateful by Friday?
It's a good question. I think one thing that sometimes annoys founders is that we apply radical transparency to our coaching of the founders. So all the partners in the fund have a weekly sort of coaching session with each founder. And here we really do like use this radical transparency and tell them the truth, like and say that you're not, you know, you're not selling enough, you're not doing enough, or your product is not good enough. And we try to get to the core of the, you know, the bottlenecks and the challenges and push them on these things. And sometimes they get annoyed at first and they're like, oh, what do you mean? You know, I'm selling enough, or I can't sell yet. I need to build more product. You know, it's not ready yet to go out and sell. Well, you should always be selling. You should always be out there talking to customers. So that can create a little bit of friction in the beginning. And then they realize, you know, it actually made sense later on as well.
Okay, Rebecca, let's talk about hiring now for a second, because it's like, especially when you're a CEO, like of a, like early stage, like pre-seed company, you've got to do a lot of things by yourself. And one of the, or if not the most crucial thing, is hiring. So probably every CEO should hire like the first, I don't know, one, two, like five, 10 people in their company. So first in hires, you know, the role founders, maybe tell me about the role that founders under hire and later regret.
I think
when they start.
One role that I've noticed founders under hire and really can benefit from is actually a founder associate or an executive assistant. It's, you know, not the most qualified, hard role to find, but still so few hire yeah. these, but the ones that do, even especially at the really early stages, because right at the early stages between sort of pre-seed and seed, you're actually expected to do a lot yourself as a founder, right? You're expected to sell, you're expected to lead product development, you're expected to fundraise, you're expected to hire. So actually having support that takes away sort of administrative, you know, simple tasks, but time-consuming tasks from you as a founder can give massive ROI. Imagine freeing up hours from a founder who's super, super busy doing all of these things. It really have massive impact. And so many founders wait with this hire too long, I think.
Nice. Makes sense. Rebecca, two fundraising truths. One that is an instant green flag, and one that it's like instant thanks but no thanks.
So instant green flag, I often find in sort of the founder section of a pitch deck, when you see something the founders have accomplished or something that stand out. So I love, it doesn't have to be that you've been building a successful startup or something like that. It can be something else that stands out, something that tells me that you have these sort of outlier potential or these qualities that can make you build a global leader and transform a whole industry. So founder section, like finding something about the founders that really stand out, something you've accomplished, or as we mentioned before, it can be a failure as well, but telling me what you've learned from it. That's a green flag, like seeing these things in the founder section. What's a red flag? So red flag for me is when you definitely, if you lie, I mean, then it's a no-go. If you exaggerate, like if you pretend that you have a title that you don't have, or you pretend you founded a company that you didn't actually end up founding, lies are red flag always, even if it comes across in the pitch deck. And then I think showing too many like awards you won at different competitions. Here, every investor is different, right? But for me, I'm a little bit, this is more of a yellow flag, I guess. If you have a page with all the awards or all the media you've been in, that's for me a bit of a yellow flag, rather than a page showing, the customers you closed or the, product achievements you've had. That's much more valuable for me.
Rebecca, thank you for this answer. It's I totally agree. Lying is a no-go. For the green flags, I think so it comes down again to this kind of a grit, what you achieved, or what was the hardest part, thing in your life, and how did you bounce back, how did you go? So kind of this greed and perseverance, but also you mentioned that I think this domain expertise, extraordinary domain expertise that the person has, that maybe has but that no one or very little people in the world have, because there's a founder was grew up on a construction site with his mom or dad, and they know everything about the construction industry, and then they're building a tech for construction, and I think that kind of gives this extraordinary domain expertise that there's no question that they cannot answer, or if even there is a question that they can't answer, then you're just gonna go and say, hey, I don't know, but let me go and figure it out. And this kind of domain expertise plus the speed of an openness to learn fast, I think this is what also probably you'd be looking for when you go for founders, especially the early stage when, tell me.
Yeah, no, sometimes this can help, right? That you've spent a lot of time in the industry you're taking on and you have unique insights from this industry. Yeah. But I also don't mind if you're coming from a different industry and you've learned something that you can apply to another industry. So you coming in from an outsider in perspective and see something that no one in the industry could see because they're so biased from their own you know, reality in this industry. But you could see it as an outsider now trying to change it. So I also don't mind if you come from that from the outside in.
I agree with that as well, because what actually like brings the change about is different backgrounds. Like, it's nice and cool to have like people like-minded people that you can like agree with and move forward. But I think what brings a real change is these people from different backgrounds, bringing different perspectives, different insights that you maybe didn't think about. And then like out of this friction and like building on edge, they're like true innovation comes, right? Awesome. Rebecca, this is the time during the show that I usually play a little game with my guests. It's like I call it rapid fire. So I shoot a quick question at you and you give me quick answer. It doesn't have to be like one word answer. If you don't have a one word answer for this, can be like a couple of sentences, but usually the idea is to keep it quick. Are you up for playing?
Let's go.
Awesome. Rebecca, so this is going to be the first one. We already talked about it a bit, but maybe you can just now use one word for it. Founder trait you'll always back at Preseed.
I think I go with obsession, like true obsession, especially if you are coming from sort of the outside in, right? I still want to see that you have been truly obsessed about the problem and the space you're taking on, that you've spoken to, 50 to 100 potential customers, that you've really studied the other players in your industry and show this obsession, I guess also passion, but like obsession about this problem in this space.
Nice. Most overrated early stage metric?
I guess metrics in general. At the really early stages. I think at pre-seed, if you look too much on early metrics, I think you can risk fooling yourself, because like early traction might not actually mean that much. You might have just sold very quickly to your 10 close friends in that industry. And so I guess overrated this sort of early traction or metrics in general. You got to look at more the people and the vision and the potential.
I love it. I agree 100%. Rebecca, one sprint exercise you never skip?
I would say the storytelling part. Like helping founders really, really nail that storytelling. Because sometimes you can be so caught up in your product and all your features and all the innovation and the science behind it. And it can be quite hard sometimes to raise the perspective a bit and really tell that very, very compelling story of what this will become over time. And I think if you can do that in a really good way, it will help you so much towards investors, towards first hires, towards customers as well. So that storytelling part is actually also underrated, I think, sometimes.
Yeah, I agree with that. That's a good point. Rebecca, last one. Finish the sentence. Resilience at pre-seed means?
Means technology that will safeguard our societies and evolve Europe to be prosperous and peaceful again. So really technology that is rebuilding a much more stable industry and society in this new geopolitical reality. Sorry, that was very long.
That was a quick answer, but nice. I love it. Thank you so much, Rebecca. I had such a great time on the show today. Thank you for joining us. I think people are going to love it. Thank you. And I hope to meet you in person someday.
It was fun. Yeah. Nice meeting you. Thank you.